we can begin, we finally, thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen, have a quorum. So we've got Senator Dibble's bill. To begin with, Senator Dibble moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, I think the motion carries. The other day, some of you criticized me for mishearing a vote, and I was right. So I wanted to be a little bit careful this time. What we're going to do is we're going to listen to a description of Senator Dibble's bill. We'll certainly recess for session, depending on how far we get. We might recess a few minutes earlier, but we'll begin with Senator Dibble and a description of your spreadsheet and your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I will need to move a technical amendment, the A30. A3, I think it's in your packets.
We need to distribute it. Okay, if we can have that distributed.
Well, it's not in your packet. Sorry about that. Mr. Chair, members, these are just some technical fixes, picking up an appropriation that hadn't been picked up in the committee revised report, fixing a redundancy. That's the Safe Routes to School piece, fixing a redundancy in the armor increase. That's the emergency communications piece. And then on lines 1.7 through 1.12, that's making sure that we're treating the CASA formula the way we intended, the county state aid highway formula.
And Senator Dibble, does this match the spreadsheet then, or
no, it doesn't.
Which conforms which to which?
Ms. Boyd is going to answer that question.
Mr. Chair and Senators, no, the spreadsheet matches the division report, so it will be updated with these technical fixes.
Okay. And so I understand the numbers. Now, is the second part of the amendment, Senator Dibble, then you consider a technical fix, or is that to match up numbers with numbers?
No.
From 1.8 on?
Yeah.
Yes.
That doesn't really affect the numbers. It's a technical fix on a policy intention that we didn't quite get right at the division level.
Okay. All right. We have Senator Dibble's motion on the A30 amendment to further discussion. If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. This one definitely carries. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'll give a high-level overview of this bill, and then I'll have Ms. Boyd and Ms. Berzovsky and Mr. Turner walk through the specifics of the bill and the spreadsheet. Mr. Chair, members, what we seek to accomplish and achieve in Senate File 1173 is to present a comprehensive statewide transportation finance and policy proposal that allows us to make key investments with a real measurable return in terms of jobs, mobility, economic competitiveness, safety, our ability to build and maintain our transportation infrastructure so that people can get to where they're trying to go, which, of course, is rather poignant on a day like today. Some of the centerpieces are what we're terming a reform in our motor fuel tax regimen by enacting a gross receipts tax on motor fuel, which would be paid at the wholesale level of 5.5%, and reducing by 6 cents per gallon the gas tax that's paid at the pump by consumers at the retail level. It also contains an additional half-cent sales tax in the seven-county metropolitan area for the purposes of transit investments, both capital and operating initiatives. This will be added to the existing quarter cent for a total of 0.75 cents of sales tax in the metro area, which would put us kind of in the middle of the pack with other metropolitan areas of our type and size to raise the kinds of funds we need to maintain forward progress on those key investments to keep the region economically competitive. And then for Greater Minnesota Transit, we try to raise about half of what the identified need is, as has been articulated through significant analysis and study, the most recent coming from the Transportation Advisory Committee. We know that to serve those areas that are totally unserved and serve those populations that are underserved throughout the state, Greater Minnesota Transit, we would need to try to raise an additional $42 million per year. We don't quite get there. We get to about $20 million per year through a couple of different efforts. The motor vehicle sales tax is currently at 6.5%, unlike the regular sales tax, which, of course, we know is at 6.875. So we equalize that and use that increment. Of course, it goes into the 60-40 distribution as identified by the state's constitution. But within the 40%, which is now divvied up for transit on a 36% and 4% basis between Metro Transit and Greater Minnesota Transit, we change that to 35% and 5%, Metro Transit, as it turns out, still receives some additional resources, but that allows us to get about an additional $5 or $6 million to Greater Minnesota Transit for that purpose. The motor vehicle lease tax, which is currently split, half going into the general fund $32 million going into the general fund, that was for the angel investor tax credit, and then the remainder was split between Greater Minnesota Transit, and then some is put into the CASA formula for five metro counties, not Hennepin and Ramsey. We hold them at their current level and take the growth in that and put that in Greater Minnesota Transit. And then we take $10 million per year from from our general fund target and put that towards Greater Minnesota Transit. That's kind of the broad outlines on the transportation side of the bill. And some important initiatives are also contained that then we can aspire to and try to achieve. One of the key initiatives that's very exciting is corridors of commerce within the Trunk Highway Fund, where we are able to, and there's some maps and a chart at your location, where we can do things like invest in corridors like Highway 14 in south and southwestern Minnesota, a key stretch of highway that has safety issues, has maintenance issues, but also harbors a lot of economic potential. We've heard from a number of businesses and factories and the like that are just waiting for the kind of enhancements to that corridor that they need to be able to expand, to move freight in and out of those communities. That's a key corridor. So corridors of commerce is designed to address situations like that all over the entire state. That would be coordinated with an existing program in the Department of Transportation, the Corridor Investment Management Strategy, which some of you may be familiar with. Then we also have the Transportation and Economic Development Initiative that's coordinated with the Department of Economic Development, and that's a mechanism by which local partners can partner with MnDOT and DEED to make investments and raise some matching dollars for some key investments in specific locations, not corridors necessarily, but specific locations. In terms of the transit side and the metro area, we keep the current governance system in place, but we make some key changes so that there's a more authentic collaboration and genuine partnership between the Metropolitan Council and local units of government and leaders at the local level. The dollars that are raised will be planned for jointly through the Transportation Policy Plan, and the existing CTIB, County Transit Improvement Board, would play a role in the approval of the Transportation Policy Plan. That's the vision document that shows all the transitway investments that we're going to make over the coming 10 to 15 years. The dollars that are raised would be split out in a jointly certified document that goes to the entity that's going to be dispersing those funds, so that operation dollars go to the Met Council and the transitway capital investments would go to CTIB, and they would prioritize those and make those as grants to the Met Council for the purpose of building the transitways identified around the metropolitan area. And then we have the existing GEARS committee, which has representatives from cities, from municipalities around the metropolitan area. They would be able to program and make grants for a variety of different purposes with a small amount of that money. Bike ped, doing the stationary planning, making sure the land use economic development and housing planning is done in a way that helps us maximize those transit investments. We also have some local tools in the bill. These are strictly optional for local units of government. As they come to the table and articulated their growing gap in the needs and revenues, they've asked us for some tools that they can enact as a local option. We have the existing county sales tax for transportation purposes. We make some changes to that so that that can be done at the county level without referendum, and we broaden the purposes for which those dollars, if they opt for those, can be used for. We have what we now call the street maintenance districts that cities can develop. They can develop a district, with boundaries, raise funds over a period of time for the purpose of maintaining the streets in good repair in their city, so to avoid kind of the calamitous major reconstruction that occurs if you fail to maintain streets in your city. And then the wheelage tax, which has been currently confined to the metropolitan area counties, any county in the state can opt for a wheelage tax of $10. It has to be a uniform amount, $10, for a period of time, because our system, the computer system by which we assess and collect that tax, doesn't have the current flexibility. In 2017, it will have some flexibility, and so when 2017 rolls around, counties can raise up to $20 on the wheelage tax if sure. they so desire.
Thank you, and I apologize. Maybe you want us to wait till the end to get some questions, but when we're close on the thought of the Senator Dibble on the taxing districts and cities, is this something new that you have a block, a whole bunch of folks yeah. in a neighborhood, and they're able to? How does that taxing authority work? Do they get together as a brand new city council or a subset of city council to tax their local property tax or properties for a like an overlayment, something like that?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, this is a new idea. It doesn't exist currently. And, yes, it's a city authority, and it's a specific area that would be drawn into, and it would be for a specific purpose in a specific amount of time.
So Mr. Chair, and the City Council certainly has taxing authority for that, so this would be a subset of the City Council, and they would make recommendations for the city to make the final decision on an additional tax on the property, or do they have will this group have the authority to just tax those people without going any further than that?
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, we can walk through the policy. It's written up in the bill.
Sure.
When we get to that, or we can try to describe it in more detail now. It's the City Council, and there needs to be proper notice and hearings and all of that. It's not a subset of the City Council. It's an act of a City Council to do so. It would be it would be a fee or over and above kind of property taxes of general application.
And why I ask that, Mr. Chair, we do that in lake associations. We'll actually have their own subset of assessing authority and for tarring roads and stuff for just lake associations. I wonder if that's similar, but we can certainly wait and have it described later.
Right. Mr. Chair, it'd be different than lake associations. It would be an act of the City Council. It wouldn't be, I suppose a group of citizens could themselves get together and say, hey, we think this is a good idea and we want our City Council to do this, but the City Council is the authority to make this happen. Couple of quick things I'll just mention quickly on the transportation side, then I'll run through just a list of some of the initiatives on the public safety side. We close up.
Answer a couple of questions.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Dibble, the wheelage tax,
mm-hmm.
Sort of a three-part question.
Mm-hmm.
Could you give me a working definition of what a wheelage tax is? How does the government go about computing mm-hmm. and collecting it?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a new idea. And then, if I understand, after a certain period of time, counties can utilize it. Is that an option to the counties, or is it mandatory?
Thank you.
Three-part question.
All right. So a wheelage tax is a per-vehicle fee for a vehicle that is registered with the state of Minnesota and domiciled, is that the word we use, domiciled in a particular county. So, you know, if you park your car at night at your address in whatever county you live in, it would be considered domiciled in that county. It's collected on the license tab renewal that we do every year. So it's collected by driver and vehicle services and then remitted to the county, and they use it for transportation purposes. And it is presently only available to metropolitan area counties, and only a few counties. Do we know which counties do it, opt for it?
We don't have a list. It's only like three or four.
It's like three or four of the counties in the metropolitan area, the seven counties in the metropolitan area. It is optional. It will remain optional. We have to have a uniform amount. So those counties that currently collect it at $5, if they want to continue to collect it, will have to collect it at $10. There can be no variability from county to county presently because our driver and vehicle services computer system is not flexible enough to handle that. We're developing a new driver and vehicle services system. It's called MinLARS. It's under development now. It's a very, very kind of comprehensive, from the ground up, reconstruction of our entire driver and vehicle services transaction and computer system. That for which we're paying a little bit of fee in our various driver and vehicle licensing and titling transactions, and that will be. That will go live in 2017. At that point, that wheelage tax or a wheelage fee can be made flexible to whatever dollar amount, and we're saying up to $20 on a on a county to county basis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, having served for many years on transportation and now not being on it, I have interest in some of the nuances of the policies and how they impact various regions of the state. And so when you talked about the MVEST going up to six to the same as the rest of the sales tax at 6.8 something, then we've also got our local option sales taxes in Hennepin County. So actually the effective tax rate in Hennepin County, do you know what that would be given the local option sales taxes?
Right. Mr. Chair, I believe the local option sales taxes are not enacted on cars. There's like a flat fee of $20 that cars have for some of these local option sales taxes.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, that's good because I'd asked that question and that's not the answer I was told. So So either way, that's a flat fee on top of the...
At least in some instances. I'm not sure about all. I
mean, well, because we've got the entertainment taxes that are... levied in Hennepin County, and the city of Minneapolis has different ones. So looks like Commissioner McLaughlin is shaking his head. I would like to know the answer about all that. Then, in addition, Senator Dibble, as you know, I've followed this lease tax issue pretty closely since I first came to the legislature. And there's actually a decline right now in those who are leasing because the interest rates are so low that that it's very, it's much easier for people to buy outright than it was when interest rates were higher. And so I don't think you're going to see the kind of growth in that we were seeing at one point. And that's what my research has shown. But I am concerned about the continuing sending that lease tax to greater Minnesota, because I think if you looked at where the sales tax leasing is occurring, it's occurring in the metro area. I would say disproportionately, you just wouldn't find much leasing going on in that outstate area. So in terms of the nexus where people pay and then receive benefit of that service, that's a disconnect that doesn't seem fair. And in addition, then if you add on the sales tax, transit tax that you're proposing, which I am for, but again, we don't in the metro area. We don't, for example, Southwest Light Rail, we don't get bonding dollars. We pay for that with the dollars we spend in this proposal. So I just raise these things because I think continually there are these policy decisions whereby when it comes to transportation, not in all areas, I know that it's completely different in other committee jurisdictions, but when it comes to transportation, it does often feel as though the Metro puts in these dollars, and yet the way the money is divided isn't always reflective of that.
Mr. Chair, I hope all the Greater Minnesota members who are worried about a Minneapolis legislator chairing the Transportation Committee are listening to what Senator Bonhoff is saying.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure the Greater Minnesota legislators had a choice in that committee chair, but you've done a fine job. So.
Well, Mr. Chair, the Greater Minnesota legislators had a big voice in who was selected, and it was not a given.
Well, if he could have, Senator Peterson would have joined in that, if he could have. But
Mr. Chair, the Greater Minnesota senators can demonstrate their support on the Senate floor when the bill comes up.
in support of the chairman.
In support of the chairman.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
That's a good point, Senator Peterson. There will be opportunities. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, so we close up a couple of small, what we call loopholes in the motor vehicle sales tax, closing up, the transfer of vehicles as a gift, making sure that we can continue to maintain that for family members. And then the collector vehicle transfers, it's a flat fee that hasn't been raised in quite a while. We raised that a little bit as well. On the public safety side, I'll just run through as a list some of the initiatives in the public safety article. Some funds for capital security, trying to start down the path of fulfilling the recommendations of the task force that met over the last year. In my opinion, we don't even get close to doing the kinds of things that we need to do on capital security, and hopefully we can do some more of that.
Senator Bolt.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, folks can't approach committee members at the table. If you want to reach a committee member, talk to a staff person, talk to a page, but you can't approach the committee table. Sorry, Senator Dibble.
Some additional resources for soft body armor reimbursements for state patrol members and police around the state. Some additional staff to help speed up our title processing function. Replacing the phone system at the Driver and Vehicle Services division, some staff to help with the facial recognition software effort, so an effort to address some duplication in driver's licenses, some improvements to our novice driver, our driver's ed programs, the Senator Dahl initiative, reestablishing the school safety center that had been defunded in years past. This is a function that provides technical resource and support to schools for some of these extremely tragic situations that have cropped up from time to time, including in Minnesota. Some funding for our forensic labs, some funding for maintaining our live scan fingerprint system, which we had gotten through a federal grant and the operating dollars as well, but those are going to go away, so we need to pick up the maintenance efforts for our live scan fingerprint technology. Some additional dollars trying to get back to restoring some of the cuts. We don't quite get there entirely, but there have been significant cuts in the Office of Justice programs for crime victims, for youth intervention. An initiative from Senator Rest teaching police officers how to de-escalate veterans in crisis situations, and then some increases to our armor emergency communications system. That's a very broad, high-level overview, and we can walk through in more detail with staff help.
Okay, so, Senator Dibble, did you want Mr. Turner to...
Well, we'll start with Ms. Boyd on the transportation piece.
Mr. Chair and members, first, before I start walking through the spreadsheet, I want to clarify your earlier question about the technical amendment. The Safe Routes to School piece on line 1.4 of the amendment, that was an amendment put on in Transportation Division, and the totals were not picked up in the division report. That is in the spreadsheet.
Okay.
The second piece is not in the spreadsheet. So Okay, I believe I'll just run through the change items, and if there are any questions along the way on the spreadsheet, the first is in Department of Transportation and Airport Development and Assistance. This is a governor's recommendation to reduce the fund expenditures by $650,000 in each of 14 and 15, and that is to eliminate a negative fund balance in the state airports fund. That's currently forecast to be a negative $1.2 million fund balance at the end of fiscal year 15. The next change is in the Aviation Support and Services. This is a transfer of money from the state road planning line. This is a transfer that's been happening for several years in MnDOT under authorized, under existing transfer authority. So now it's just been recommended, it's been happening yearly, to be a part of their base amount. The next, there are several changes in the transit. This is Greater Minnesota Transit under MnDOT. There is an appropriation increase of general fund money of $10 million each year. That would go as grants to public transit providers in the state. There is a continuation of funding to the Minnesota Council on Transportation Access. That council was set to expire, to sunset at the end of 2014. There's language in the bill to remove that sunset and extend the council, so the administrative costs are being picked up again starting in 2015. And there are grants. There's $90,000 a year from the general fund as additional monies to local transit providers for grants for costs of rides of veteran. There are free rides provided for veterans certified as disabled.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Ms. Boyd, could you, I think Senator Dibble referenced something about how five metro counties, there something was being frozen, and instead the money was going to Greater Minnesota Transit. Mm-hmm. Was that in that Greater Minnesota appropriation increase, or can you point out where that is when we get to it?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, that will not be in the spreadsheet. That's statutory. That's statutory appropriation, so it's not a direct appropriation change, but I can run through that if you'd like now or at the end.
Whatever you want.
Okay. Existing current law on leasing says that of the revenues collected, $32 million is held off the top and remains in the general fund. The remaining amount is split 50-50 between Greater Minnesota Transit account and the CASA fund, but that is limited to five counties. It excludes Hennepin and Ramsey.
Where is that in the bill to look at?
Oh, we'll find it.
It's back
you.
In the policy,
it's
Mr.
in
Chair.
The policy article, and I can find that for you if you give me a second. It is on page 27, section 7.
And what is the impact of, because you're freezing the amounts that those five county metro areas get, how much would they otherwise get if that wasn't frozen, roughly?
The amount. This is based on the February forecast projections for leasing, which is forecasted to increase in the forecast. But the increase in 2014 would be about $4.5 million to Greater Minnesota and a corresponding reduction to the counties. And in 2015, about $6.3 million.
And Senator Dibble, what's the rationale for just including the five metropolitan counties, not Hennepin and Ramsey?
Mr. Chair. Senator Sieben, because of what we're doing on the gross receipts tax, significant more dollars are going to be coming into the CASA formula. So the five-county metropolitan area, all counties are going to be receiving significant new resources through what we're doing. With our extremely difficult general fund target, we had a cut target overall for general fund, and the fact that the governor came in with no new funding for Greater Minnesota Transit, which means Greater Minnesota Transit would have actually lost ground and been able to provide less service to fewer folks. It seemed like we're holding the five counties who are receiving this portion of the motor vehicle lease tax in their CASA formula harmless, so we're just taking the growth, so they're being held harmless, not being cut per se. They're just not receiving the growth, and we're just trying to figure out a way to get some more dollars to Greater Minnesota Transit. So they're just enjoying some of the growth in the motor vehicle lease tax that's forecast, getting what they receive today, but then getting quite a few additional resources through some of these increases, and there's a couple of other spots where some more money comes into the CASA formula as well.
But Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, you're not freezing the growth for Hennepin and Ramsey counties.
Oh, Mr. Chair, Hennepin and Ramsey don't get any of this money. Oh. They're specifically excluded.
Mr. Chair.
Never have.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, and that was what I was objecting to, because I don't think that's right, given where the money comes from, and I'd actually like to see where the money does, you know, flow in to the general fund. But then you said that the angel investment tax is where the bulk of that motor vehicle lease tax was going in the general fund. Is that still the intention?
Mr. Chair, Senator Panoff. That's the whole reason we failed in our effort to get the motor vehicle lease tax considered as a motor vehicle sales tax and attributed to transportation purposes. I joined you, member, in that effort, and, mm-hmm. and we did not succeed. But folks were looking for some resources for the angel investor tax credit. You know, it goes into the general fund, supposed to come out for that purpose. It's not specifically earmarked, but it's assumed. What is the status of the angel investor? I think the angel investor tax credit still exists. So.
Mr. Chair, the governor didn't keep funding, and I'm actually carrying the bill, mm-hmm. and I know that one of the mm-hmm. people carrying the bill in the Senate, and I believe that they were planning to include it at some level, but it no longer, you know, there's no nexus between motor vehicle sales tax and that, so mm-hmm. one wouldn't have to draw that conclusion, and I would urge you to find a way to get that money back into transportation.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, I have made that declaration numerous times that someday that money will go to where it is intended, as to where the public perceives what they voted for. It's just, you know, but for one letter, S or L, it's not going to the right place where we think it would go. It would represent, though, what presently goes into the general fund. It would represent a general fund contribution. It would need to be included in a target. We would need to have the resources to do that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, one more question on that sales tax, motor vehicle sales tax. You said that it's going to be raised to the same as the other sales tax. What if, in the wisdom of this legislative session, there was some broadening of the sales tax and lowering of the overall rate? Would you then have your motor vehicle sales tax be the same new low rate?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonoff, I it's hard to know the answer to that question. We'll have to cross that bridge if we get to it. My effort is focused on, you know, getting the resources, or at least half, you know, getting halfway there for Greater Minnesota Transit. I mean, we do a pretty good job on roads and bridges in this bill. We do a pretty good job on transit in the metro area. And it felt like, you know, to have a balanced bill that I could recommend folks vote for, we absolutely needed to address the need in Greater Minnesota for transit users.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, but I'm just talking about the whole overall motor vehicle sales tax. You're increasing it mm-hmm. at the same rate as our sales tax, and the sales tax could come down this session. So just something for us to consider.
And then Mr. Chair and Senator Bonoff, we'll have a bigger problem for Greater Minnesota Transit. But, you know, and we would need to figure out then how to make up for that increasing gap then that would be represented in my bill if we were to lower the motor vehicle sales tax through a general fund replacement of those dollars. So if we get to that point, we'll have to have that conversation.
Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair, continuing on page 2 of the spreadsheet, there's no change to the appropriation for the passenger rail office in MnDOT. Under freight, there is a governor's recommendation in the Senate side as well that is $1 million one-time appropriation in 2014 for MnDOT's share of some contaminated state rail bank property cleanup. And Safe Roads to School, I talked about this briefly. This was an amendment put on in division. This is $375,000 in new spending to MnDOT for the Safe Routes to School program per year. This is an existing program, but it is funded with federal dollars now as grants to local jurisdictions for grants for funding on the Safe Routes to School program, whether that's sidewalk improvements, improving bike routes, et cetera. Moving down to state roads, there is an increase in the appropriation or a change item request in the appropriation for operations and maintenance of $5 million per year from the Trunk Highway Fund. This is to pick up increase in costs for commodities of the department, such as salt or sand or gasoline for their operations. On page 3 of the spreadsheet, there is two changes in program planning and delivery. One is linked to the earlier shift to aviation support. This is that transfer that has been made for several years already, and now it's just going to, it's suggested to be part of the base change. The second is a new item, $250,000 a year funding from the Trunk Highway Fund for a joint program office in MnDOT, called the Joint Program Office for Economic Development and Alternative Finance, basically to oversee any public-private partnerships, et cetera, that are funded in through MnDOT. Under the state road construction line item, there are several changes. The first is an extension of funding through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. There is additional money available that was not used by another state, I believe, and $1 million per year is available to MnDOT. Along with this appropriation, there is authority in the bill later in the policy language to extend the statutory authority to spend that money through 2016. The next is an appropriation of monies raised in the bill for the new Corridors of Commerce program, totaling about $157.9 million for the biennium. The next is federal monies, increased federal monies related to MAP 21 changes. MAP 21 is the new federal authorization for highways. This money also contains some recognition of program start shifts. So this will be money picked up in the biennium from the feds. So it is federal receipts and trunk highway outlays. The next is a one-time appropriation from the existing trunk highway fund balance for several initiatives. Better roads and corridor investment management strategies are two existing programs within MnDOT. These will be projects funded through those programs, also some ADA investments, and money for improvement rehabilitation of drainage structures. The next is $10 million a year in trunk highway fund appropriated to the Transportation Economic Development Program. This is an existing program, and MnDOT has already made grants under this program, but there is new language in the bill to lay out more of the competitive process and more collaboration between the Commissioner of Economic Development and the Commissioner of Transportation for these projects. And the next is an appropriation related to the new revenues raised in the bill, regular state road construction program. And I believe that's it. There's no change to highway debt service. Those are forecast numbers picked up in the bill. And there is no change to electronic communications base numbers. Top of page 4, there are changes to local roads, both county state aid and municipal state aid. These are increases in appropriations related to new revenues raised in the bill, both from the gross receipts tax and the changes to MVEST rates. As you know, Highway User Tax Distribution Fund receives 60% of MVEST revenues, and that flows through to trunk highways, county state aids, and municipal state roads, so that appropriation is made in the bill. There is no change to agency management, either agency services or buildings. And there is a small appropriation directly from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund at the bottom of page 4 for the e-workplace telework program, what they're calling phase 2. This is a continuation of work done as part of the Urban Partnership Agreement that passed in about 2008 that the state funded as well, along with federal monies. So on page 5, we're done with MnDOT, and we move on to Metropolitan Council. The only change item there is an appropriation reduction from their general fund appropriation of $23.4 million a year in the biennium, and the tails that that reduction goes down to $1.35 million a year. This is money that is intended later in the bill to be backfilled with proceeds of the increased transit sales tax. The Department of Public Safety similar to the shift between programs in MnDOT, there is a shift of small general fund shift between the Office of Communications, Public Safety Support, and Technology and Support Services, totaling a shift of $149,000. My understanding is that is related to sort of the centralization of OET services and how those are funded out of public safety. So that was a shift of money between programs. It is a net zero effect to the general fund. The top of page 6, under public safety support, there is an increase in the reimbursement amount for soft body armor provided to law enforcement personnel. If you recall, a couple years ago, we did a one-time infusion of money to take care of a backlog of requests of the safe body armor. I believe that was $472,000. That backlog has been taken care of, but this is an additional ongoing appropriation increase to sort of meet the need. So $92,000 from the general fund, and an additional, this is the first time funding of this program through the Trump Highway Fund, that would be specifically for state patrol officers. At the top of page 7, under state patrol, there is a change item, a request of $1 million increase a year for increased fuel costs for state patrol vehicles and operations. And then as referenced, there is a change item for capital security. This is a governor's recommendation of $1.5 million a year to do some aspects of the recommendations of the Capitol's Security Advisory Task Force.
And, Ms. Boyd, if I can ask you some portion, what's recommended, what are we doing, what are we not doing?
The rider language in the bill specifically states the establishment of the emergency manager position and also additional personnel for through the state patrol to police the Capitol complex area. There's no change in the vehicle crimes unit appropriation. There are several appropriation changes under driver and vehicle services, mostly additional staff for different purposes. Under vehicle services, there is additional staff. $1 million a year will fund, I believe, 10 FTEs for increasing time of vehicle title processing to get that time wait down. And then the $98,000 in 2015, that's a one-time appropriation for the vehicle services portion of the new DVS phone system that is being designed and will be with an agreement with OET to design that phone system. Under driver services, there is additional staff, $150,000 ongoing starting in 2015 to fund 2 FTEs to implement facial recognition in the department and reviewing the database and looking for duplicates in existing licenses and identification cards. And then there's the $52,000 one-time appropriation, which is the driver services portion of the phone system replacement. And then in 14, 15, and 16, there are small appropriations for a half-time FTE to assist with the development of the Novice Driver Education Improvement Task Force that is created later in the bill. There's no change to traffic safety or pipeline safety appropriations, and then I'll pass it to Mr. Turner for the remaining public safety items.
Okay, Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, continuing the Department of Public Safety under Homeland Security and Emergency Management, on page 9, line 294, the governor recommended $1,060,000 for the creation of a Minnesota School Safety Center, and the chairman concurs with the governor's rec. If you move down to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, line 315, the governor recommended $125,000 each year for forensic lab equipment from the general fund. And once again, the chairman concurred. Move to line 317, $200,000 each year from the general fund for forensic lab staffing, and that is also included in the division report. And finally, line 319, live scan fingerprinting maintenance. We have 177 live scan machines across the state. The bill appropriates $310,000 the first year and $389,000 the second year for live scan maintenance.
Thank you. Mr. Turner, I'm not on the committee, so I wasn't part of any of the testimony, but was there any talk of the St. Paul lab shutting down, or was there talk about The forensic lab sending more to the VCA lab. Was there any testimony to that at all?
Sir DeVille.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and Senator Ingebrigtsen. Yes, there was, and the agency was queried about that. I'll invite them to the table to talk more about that, so I don't misrepresent what they had to say. But the short version is the closure of the St. Paul Crime Lab has created a lot of pressure on the BCA labs. And what I didn't know until we had the hearings was that the St. Paul Crime Lab was also processing evidence from a couple of other jurisdictions as well, I think Dakota and Ramsey County. So what we're trying to sort through, I want to support the fullness of this request. I want to make sure we're doing it in a way that's that allocates the costs appropriately. It's not clear how much St. Paul and these other jurisdictions are paying for that additional pressure. That has not yet been made clear. It's also quite clear in our statutes that trunk highway funds are ineligible for these purposes. Apparently that's been done for some time outside of what the law requires, so we need some additional understanding of why and how that's been done. It's a specific exclusion of an eligible purpose for trunk highway funds. The rationale is that they process some of the evidence of things that occur on our highways, like drunk driving and that sort of thing. So I understand that nexus, and I'm open to that conversation. But by extension, our courts prosecute cases, our prosecutors investigate those cases, our defenders defend those cases, so why aren't they doing a take from the trunk highway funds? So we're sorting through some of those questions right now. Short version, a lot of pressure on the BCA labs, a request for some significant dollars. We put some general fund in there. We don't put trunk highway fund. What is the analysis? I haven't yet seen that. How much pressure, how much is it costing, who's paying, et cetera.
Thank you. And just a quick follow-up. That, I should know more about that than I obviously seem to know here. But I know that's changed over the years, and it wasn't that long ago, I think, a couple other crime labs came forward and were asking for state funding. And if they're not working out, then that is going to be a big workload on the BCA. Right. There's no question about it. And if we did supply them with some dollars, hopefully, I guess they would help us if they're wanting to get out of the business. They would help us with some dollars at the state level to move it. So,
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say what I left out in my comment is I do know that prospectively, the city of St. Paul is paying for a couple of lab technicians. But again, I don't understand if they're going to be being able to handle all of these cases that come in from those three jurisdictions. I don't know what we're doing about. There's a tremendous backlog right now because there's so much pressure on those labs because of this circumstance.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Dibble or Mr. Turner, could we go back up to line 294 and just have a brief description of what the Minnesota School Safety Center is or is going to do, a little bit about what it's about?
Mr. Chair, I'll take a first stab at it, and maybe the agency can describe in more detail. This is a center that had existed for some time and then was defunded by Governor Pawlenty. We've had, of course, now a number of tragic, I'll just say it, shooting circumstances, not the least of which was the one in Connecticut. And so the idea is that this center be extremely well-versed in appropriate response and provide advice and technical support to schools so they're fully ready for any kind of circumstance that might occur on their premise. Give them advice, training, just kind of be a centralized resource to schools around the state for purposes of improving safety, particularly in these most dire circumstances.
Thank you, Senator. That's fine.
All right.
All right. Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, moving on to page 10. Fire Marshal is, the chairman recommends a straight base appropriation. Gambling and alcohol enforcement, what's listed on line 343 is a change item. Actually isn't. It came in as amendment in division. It should have been in the base. It's an appropriation from the Viking Stadium bill to the Gambling and Alcohol Enforcement Division in DPS. The appropriation is there to help them monitor the pull tabs that finance the Viking Stadium.
Senator Nino, here's your chance.
We have a germaneness nexus here.
Mr. Chair, that's perilously close to policy. I'll wait for the floor.
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, moving on to Office of Justice Programs. The governor recommended $3 million for the biennium for an increase in crime victim assistance grants, and the chairman's bill concurs. And in addition, the bill has $3 million for the biennium in youth intervention program grants. And finally, the bill appropriates $100,000 for community safety personnel grants for de-escalation scenarios.
And Mr. Chair, just a little more detail about the crime victim assistance grants. That's split out in a couple of different ways. I probably need to look at the rider to remind myself exactly how that's split out. And then the community safety personnel grants for de-escalation, that's a Senator Rest initiative, and that's for de-escalating crisis situations, specifically with veterans.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Letts.
Where is the rider language in the bill that gives more detail on victim assistance grants and the youth intervention program grants?
Which 19 is the rider language?
Okay. Mr. Chair, that's on page 19.
Thank you.
So the when I said in two parts, so the two parts are for existing crime victim programs and then to meet the needs of underserved and unserved areas of the state.
Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, the final item is on page 11, line 371, armor maintenance, $1.6 million transfer to DOT. This was already included in the governor's totals, and we had a transfer rider. We deleted the rider in division when it was pointed out that this money was already included in paragraph D of the Emergency Communications Network's appropriation. And that is the end of the appropriations.
Okay, thank you. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Berzovsky, can you help walk us through some of the policy articles? Well, or, Mr. Chair, move a bill up to the floor before?
Before we do that, are there other questions on the spreadsheet? Well, if I might, and let me explain to members what I'd like to do now. And I'm sorry, Ms. Brzozowski. There's another bill that's been added to the agenda. That's House File 729, which is Senator Dietzick's bill. We could have the bill. So if we can lay Senate File 1173 on the table, and we'll pick that up in a few. Well, we're going to close the session. We'll pick it up. If we can before session, otherwise after session. I think we have copies of the bill to distribute. So just let me explain numbers. This is not meant to be anything surreptitious. Senator Tomasoni's not here, but everybody knows we have Senator Tomasoni's omnibus finance bill on the floor during session today. And as I think members are aware,
The House matches in their never-ending quest to have as many committees as they possibly can. I have something like four committees or something that align with Senator Tomassoni, or three committees plus another committee. And so with Senator Tomassoni's bill passing, we need to have the appropriate House file on the floor, because we're going to have to match up with a couple of conference committees. Senator Tomassoni is not going to be able to he could handle everything on his own, but the discussions with the House are that we'll probably have two conference committees. There'll be an Environment Ag Conference Committee and an Economic Development Commerce Conference Committee. So one of the House bills that's come over is House File 729, which is Representative Mahoney's omnibus economic development bill. Senator Dietzig is the author of the companion Senate File 1057. The House file has come over. It's in the committee. And so what I simply want to do is not consider the bill. We're going to consider the Senate bill during session today. Again, that's Senator Tomassoni's bill, as all members here know, because we spent a lot of time with the bill. You know, remember we talked about nurseries and all sorts of stuff with that bill. So I'm simply looking on a procedural basis to get House File 729 to the floor so that we can then be able to prepare for the conference committee process. So it's as simple as that. It's not meant to be any more complicated. And I hope I've explained that sufficiently. Some members might be comfortable with a motion, if some member might make it, if Senator Latz might move that House File 729 be recommended to pass.
Mr.
It would
Chair.
Be simply on the floor. Be simply on the floor. We can certainly do this without recommendation. Maybe Senator Latz, that might be the better motion. And we can do it so that we can then set up a conference committee. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate your explanation, but it's just not as simple as that. I'm going to have to ask some questions so I understand
sure.
a little better. House File 729 is going to the floor. This is now going to be the Jobs and Economic Development bill so that we can send it to conference committee.
Senator Fischbach, I believe that's what's intended. There have been conversations between Senator Bach and Speaker Thiessen relative to the conference committee makeup, not the members of the conference committees, obviously, but in terms of how we structure the conference committees. And in the case of Senator Tomassoni, his division matches up to, and maybe Mr. Bowden's in a better position to help me, matches up to House Environment Ag Committee chaired by Representative Wagenius, House Economic Development chaired by Representative Mahoney, House Commerce chaired by Representative Atkins, and I think House Energy chaired by Representative Hortman. I'm not sure. Mr. Bodden, have I missed four or five committees there, or have I got them all?
Mr. Chair, I think that's reasonably complete.
Okay. So we need more bills to try to match up. And I don't know procedurally where things are going to be over these next few days in terms of the mixture of bills, because, again, Senator Tomassoni's bill matches up to several of the House bills. And in the mix-and-match process of setting up the conference committees, I'm not sure what ends up ultimately in the mix. But this particular bill, since it's come over from the House because they've passed it off the House floor, the House file has been referred to the Senate Finance Committee. And, Senator Fischbach, obviously for the last couple of years you were heavily involved in some of these decisions, and I'm not sure to what extent there was this kind of mix-and-match with the House. I don't think there was as much.
No.
You guys did a little bit better in trying to keep a handle on that,
Mr.
the House
Thank
and the
you.
Senate. And, you know, the House has got, you know, all these folks who wish to be finance chairman, and so it gets a little bit confusing. And it's nothing that we haven't done before, but that's what the intent is.
So, Mr. Chair, it's the intent. This is what the House passed, and we do have a House summary. But I understand that it's going to be without recommendation. The motion is going to be without recommendation. Is it the intent then to get this to the floor and take that portion? I mean, it sounds like it's 5-1 about on the committee. So you're going to
we've got Senator Tomasoni is doing the work of five House members. That's amazing.
He's a tremendous legislator.
and so taking those five committees, cutting it down to two, is it the intent then to just on the floor take portions of Senator Tomasoni's bill, add it to this House file so that you have them prepared for conference committee?
Senator Fischbach, I think so. I'm not sure. I don't think we've gotten quite that far in the process. It's just that we know we've got this bill here, and we have Senator Tomasoni's bill on the floor today. And so I'm not sure if we're simply going to pass Senator Tomasoni's bill off the floor and then simply if we can simply then – maybe Mr. Bowden can speak to that better than I can – if we can simply take appropriate portions of Senator Tomasoni's bill and say, okay, this portion goes to this conference committee. I'm not sure we actually have to have votes on the floor once we've passed the bill off the floor. Because, you know, if in the conference committee process, if there's a Senate position established, it's appropriate for a conference committee. And if you pass a freestanding bill, you could consider that in the conference committee process. So I think there's a chance it might be able to align, things might be able to align in that fashion. But obviously, we're not going to go into conference committee with, you know, rewriting the Senate bill, depending on what happens today on the floor. So, you know, we haven't had the other – I don't know where these other bills are in the House. We might end up having – and what's going to end up being a House file, what's going to be a Senate file. I think the thought was – but I'm not totally sure. I think the thought was that the environment ag piece would be the Senate file – and the economic development piece would be the House file, which is what this is, I think is what the intent was.
But, Mr. Chair, I guess what I'm understanding and explain is we don't really know what you're going to do yet, but we should send this to the floor just in because and do it today. Is that what I'm understanding?
Well, that's one paraphrase.
Okay.
I'm sure I would totally agree with that, but again, we have the economic development bill, the House file, is in the committee. The Senate economic development bill is going to be on the floor today.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to start matching up bills after the weekend for conference committee purposes. You know, we still have three or four bills left to pass. The House still has three or four bills left to pass. So we're not going to be in the conference committee process itself for another week or so. We want to start matching up bills so we can get ahead of the game.
Then, well, Mr. Chair, don't you think we should have some idea of what's going to happen, given that we're splitting up Senate bills into different conference committees, and have some idea of what's going to happen? And we're going to be here tomorrow, so we'll be on the floor tomorrow. So I guess I understand the need to get bills to the floor, but this just seems strange that we're sending bills that the Finance Committee is seeing bills that have been passed off the House floor, and now we're sending them to the Senate floor through the Finance Committee, so we might be able to make some conference committees at some point.
Senator Fischbach, I'm not sure how you handled your matchup with the conference committee process. I know what's being presented right now is something that is not unique. I mean, we've done that before over the years, both when I've chaired this committee before and when I didn't chair this committee before. I think the first year I was on this committee, and so it was a little bit different to me. I think Senator Miriam had several similar motions with similar bills, and it was a little bit above my head at that point, but you know, we were doing the same kind of thing. And part of it, to be fair, Sarah Fischbach, is when we converted the finance process. In fact, maybe it probably wasn't – yeah, it's probably my first or second term on this committee, not my first term in the Senate, where we started to diffuse the finance process. You know, if you really want to get into the long history, keep in mind that the history was that all the divisions were within the Finance Committee. If you weren't on the Finance Committee, you didn't serve on a Finance Division. This diffusion started in 1993, and that's where the House and Senate
jurisdictions were, I think, exactly the same prior to that. There was no difference. Then we started coming up with all these different little divisions. This year, I was insistent that we not have the significant number of divisions we had prior to this, at least when the Democrats were in the majority, where we had several smaller divisions. And I wanted to cut back. And, you know, the House did not. So I think it's been a little bit exacerbated this year. Because you'll recall, when we last had the majority, the Democrats, we had 10 divisions. And that was too many. And the House still has, I think, even more divisions than they might have had previously. So that's why there's the need to kind of mix and match this. And it's again, something, this is not unique. And maybe the blame's on us for not be able to have the House and Senate conform
Mr.
from day
Chairman.
One. Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I'm going to have to leave in 5 minutes to start the floor session.
I'm sorry, Senator Pappas.
The floor session is, I'm going to have to leave in 5 minutes to start the floor session, so I've just calling that to your attention.
Okay, and thank you. So, all right, members, that's the process. We have Senator Latz's motion in front of us.
Well, and Mr. Chair, may I just, even though I understand Senator Pappas has to leave, but I would just like to make the point that I think we do need some clarity on how this is going to be handled, because there are provisions in the entire bill that if they're split up, people are wanting to know where they're going to end up and how this is going to. So I would appreciate, I mean, I understand your need to get this to the floor. I get it. I understand the process. But I'm just asking you for clarity as soon as you're able to give us some, because this is very confusing. And if you're following any kind of provision or have interest in any provision in any of Senator Tomasoni's gigantic bill,
Senator Fischbach, let me suggest something. I don't know if this would make you any happier about this. We could take House File 729 and amend it. Again, we're looking simply to match up a House file. What's in this bill is not relevant in the bill in front of us. If somebody wanted to...
Mr. Chair, it is relevant in the sense that we have to vote on it.
No. Can I make
one
comment?
Sorry. Yep.
If we wanted to amend this bill to just simply be a couple of lines and to delete all the language, that's fine, if that would make it easier.
Mr. Chair, that's certainly something I would entertain.
Okay. Mr. Bodern, could you... You know, we don't have a written amendment, and as Senator Pappas points out, we're going to have a session in a few minutes. Could
you still have the title?
Mr. Bodern, can you suggest language for a delete everything amendment that would be a couple of lines where we just simply send the file to the floor and then have the ability to match up on the conference committees?
Mr. Chairman, I think I've identified a standalone section that doesn't really have any significant policy effect that you could isolate. If you look on page 110, line 18 of the House file, there's a reporting provision for the Commissioner of Commerce. You could amend House File 729 to delete everything with the exception of Article 7, Section 4. So that the members are not being required to digest all of the other material in House File 729.
Mr. Chair, if it makes it any easier, I'll make that motion.
Well, Senator Latz, could you withdraw your motion?
Withdrawn.
Okay. Senator Fischbach moves to delete everything in House File 729 except, and renumber appropriately, except page 110, section 4. And to allow counsel to draft appropriately. Senator Fischbach?
So moved.
Okay, on the Fischbach motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Senator Latson renews his motion that House File 729 as amended be recommended to pass.
Without recommendation.
Without recommendation. Thank you. So, again, let's repeat that. Senator Latson moves that House File 729 as amended, be recommended to pass without recommendation and sent to the floor. On that motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed.
Oh.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you, Senator Dietzick, for that presentation.
Okay, but I'm ready.
And
I'm actually ready for questions.
That's it. No, believe me.
Well, believe me, I've been prepping. Scared the daylights out of me. You want me to go where?
Don't help us out any further. Okay. All right. So we've concluded the spreadsheet. Before we get into the discussion of the bill, we do have a session in a couple minutes. Rather than get into the middle of it and then recess, why don't we recess now? We'll meet after session, and it'll probably be a little bit after session, and then take up Senator Dibble's bill again. So the committee is in recess. Thank you.
Thank you.